This is Talk of Iowa. I'm Dennis Reese. The Apple iPhone store sells about $200 million worth of applications or apps every month. Many of the apps are free. You pay for some, usually less than $10 each. You can find apps to compare hotel room prices, read Shakespeare, even examine brain scans. And thanks to a Coralville software development company called Componica, there's an app called Memorize Words, a Spanish flashcard education game. It's now made the top 10 list in educational apps. We'll hear from Steve Mitchell of Componica. Also this hour, the first new Iowa history magazine in decades is in its second year of publication. The glossy, well-illustrated Iowa History Journal has turned up some unique stories, including the rediscovery of the first University of Iowa All-American football star, Fred Becker of Waterloo, who was killed fighting as a doughboy in France in World War I. Hear more about the magazine. The first news from Iowa Public Radio and NPR. This is Talk of Iowa. I'm Dennis Reese. For Steve Mitchell, starting a software development company was an opportunity to help in the field of medicine. It's still a large part of his firm, Componica, located at the University of Iowa's Technology Innovation Center. But Mitchell has found some other successes for Componica. The latest is an app for the iPhone called Memorize Words for Spanish. It's made the top 10 list for all apps in the education category. I asked Mitchell how his small company has become a hot iPhone app developer.
Well, it took a life of its own. I founded the company after graduating from the university as my own little consulting company focused on areas related to what's known as machine learning and pattern recognition and computer vision. I graduated from a group that was involved collaboration between the Department of Engineering and Radiology, in which we developed software to help identify diseases and defects in images using what's known as computer vision. And my company was founded originally as kind of an industrial use of that stuff outside of medicine. And then sometime around last year, I just felt that mobile applications, smartphones, were becoming more and more popular. And so just on my own, I started developing software in it, and one of the programs I developed was a program that was involving language instruction, but it was more for myself. It was just doing something personally to learn Russian, since my wife is Russian, and Korean, since my mother is Korean, and so I focused on that just on the side outside of my normal consulting work. And it started taking a life of its own, and I hired some software engineers who were also in the building at the time, and we worked together and we released the product. One of the things that just happened in February was that our application for language instruction for Spanish, memorizing words, really took off. It ended up being the fourth best-selling iPhone app in education, and it was actually amazing. I mean, we were actually in shock. You open up iTunes, and our program was dead center in what's new and what's hot, and it was validation. I mean, it just showed that a program like that would actually be beneficial, that people were using it beyond just, you know, silly little game type programs. And
how does a small software firm at the Oakdale Research Park near Iowa City that comes up with a new idea, an iPhone app, publicize it so everybody in the world knows about it and everybody is purchasing it? How do you go about that?
Well, it's with the iPhone app development, it's actually a level playing field, because you can only buy programs through the iTunes store. When you have an iPhone, it requires you to install this program, and this program controls what can be installed and purchasing of songs and programs and television shows, etc. And when we created this iPhone app, we just released it out into the world, and just from its own quality, people were attracted to it, and it just created this snowball effect.
Now, how long did that take?
It took months.
Yeah.
It took more, you know, it was released last year, and it started taking off last February. So
people email and Twitter other people and say, this is a really cool program, and the word gets around on blogs and so forth. Is that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, one of the things that just kept us going was the fact that, like, you read the reviews and they're generally positive. I mean, these were real people saying great things about your program. And it just happened to be that, you know, people would see these reviews. They would be looking at things that are, you know, suppose they wanted to learn how to speak Spanish. They would look it up on iTunes. They would see positive reviews. They would, you know, try the demo program, the free version, and then they would like it and they would get the full version. And it just kind of snowballed.
I don't have an iPhone, so when you came in, you and Katya Boltanova, your wife, is with you, and Katya lent me the iPhone, so I got to play with this memorize words for Spanish. This is the slickest, coolest thing I have ever seen. Katya, who is a language acquisitions specialist, could you just explain how it works?
First, you download it from iTunes, and a little icon shows up on your screen of iPhone or iTouch, and then you just click on it, and it goes over some instructions, directions, how to use it best, and explanation of how it works, and then it just starts feeding you a set of words, new words that you will go through, and it's going to, once a flashcard shows up, it reads the word to you, and you listen to it, look at it, and you can choose if you already know the word. You can click that button and say you already know it, or next button, and you just go through that list, and then you can start using those words in different games that come with the app and practice the words. But you can only learn a set number of words per day. Is it 25?
20.
20 words per day.
Mm-hmm. And for someone who is starting from scratch, is this a way to learn Spanish? Or you can learn it completely with this program?
You can only learn a large vocabulary set with this program, but you won't learn grammatic rules.
Oh, okay.
Any of that will have to come from either teachers or textbooks. So this is actually a really nice supplement to instructors of Spanish. It's not competing with them in any way. It just helps students to memorize as many words and practice them as fast as possible.
And you actually hear somebody saying the word. Is this somebody who came into your studio in Coralville, and you recorded this person?
Yeah, we have a little tiny sound booth, the size of a traditional phone booth, and we just stuff them in there and just have them record several hundred words at a time. Spoken three times. So the current program has 6,300 words, and so that meant that we had to find someone that was willing to, over the course of weeks, read words individually 18,000 times.
Once you actually use those words, go through the program, you retain those words for life. It's pretty guaranteed. Research shows that the retention rate is really high. And it feeds the words to you. When the next day when you log into the program, it starts giving you a list of words for review. And when you review them, you tell it if you grade how well you remember the word on a scale of 1 to 4 and
5.
1 to 5.
Okay.
And then the program remembers how well you know those words, and it starts setting repetition of words that you didn't grade too well on about when you're about to forget them.
Memorize words for Spanish, a new iPhone app from Componica at the Oakdale Research Park in Iowa City. And Steve, any plans to expand this to other languages?
We want to expand it in several different ways. My wife, since she's, you know, a native Russian speaker, she's creating the Russian database. And we are also working on a French database, and eventually one for German. But another way that we're taking it, see, this program is primarily a vocabulary builder. It's meant to help someone acquire vocabulary as rapidly as possible. But it doesn't. It's only a supplement tool. One of the things that I'm working on is actually adding additional features like training how to do conjugations, for example, in verbs or or in Russian, for example, developing cases. But I'm also interested in trying to figure out how to make the thing synthesize sentences based off of only the words that you know.
So what's a software developer look like? What's the physical plan? Just a bunch of people sitting around computers in a small room, or what's it look like?
It's fairly boring, I guess. It consists of myself and several other people sitting in front of computers. We're fairly quiet. There's also another person that helps with the artwork and various students that help with creating the databases. But one of the things that we tell the students, though, is that you might find the office environment very, very quiet because we're all concentrating on different parts.
Do you have people just sitting there dreaming up new apps from scratch?
Oh, every once in a while we just kind of sit around and one of us will just turn around and say, we need to create a strobe light app.
Okay.
And we have a whiteboard where ideas are generated, too. If somebody comes up with something, they write it down there.
Mm-hmm. But right now, I take it that most of your staff is working on these on the Memorize series, now Spanish and expanding at some point. And so the people go to again, I'm a novice. People go to the iTunes store, and you pay around, is it $8 for this?
$6.99.
That seems very reasonable for all of this.
Actually, people kind of consider us a little bit on the higher end in price, because most people tend to pay anywhere from $1 to $3 for a program. Some of the more sophisticated games can be much higher.
I mean, there's a lot to it, and it's not really so much a game as it is, as you say, it's in the education.
Yeah, that's kind of how I saw when I picked up an iPhone and an iPod Touch for the first time. I thought of it as this could be used for education. I understand that people could play games on it, but I mean, it was just more of like, how could I use this as a tool to help me do something productive when I'm at a bus stop or if I'm sitting, you know, if I have some quiet time to myself. And so that's kind of what steers us to what to create next.
You call your firm Componica. You've got how many employees now?
Myself and two software engineers and several people that are helping out in creating the Memorize Words program, but also a student that's fairly good at designing artwork and graphics for us.
If you total up the number of small firms working on these sorts of things around the country, there must be a ton, right?
Oh yeah, there's. I mean, if you look in the just on how many iPhone apps there are, they're you know, in the 100,000 something or other. I mean, each one of them, you know, it could be a major company, but it could also be just some person working on the side.
We need to take a quick break on Talk of Iowa. I'm Dennis Reese, speaking with Steve Mitchell, the founder and senior software engineer for Componica, which is located at the University of Iowa's business incubator, the Technology Innovation Center. His wife, Katya Boltanova, is also here. She's a language acquisition specialist, and they have a hot new app for the iPhone called Memorize Words for Spanish. Be back in a minute. Talk of Iowa. Talk of Iowa continues on Iowa Public Radio. I'm Dennis Reese, speaking with Steve Mitchell of Componica, a software design firm at the University of Iowa Technology Innovation Center. His wife is Katya Boltanova, and they're discussing their hot new iPhone app called Memorize Words for Spanish. Steve, you were quoted in a Des Moines Register article saying that PC versus Apple is irrelevant. People are now focusing on these handheld devices, and you thought your firm really needed to get into this as you started with as a medical, coming up with some medical applications. But things have really changed for Componica, haven't they?
About a year ago, I kind of anticipated that mobile development, application development was going to start taking off. I mean, it's you know, you read about it in Japan that pretty much the majority of people there do most of their internet usage on smartphones than actually using computers. And so I just felt that would be happening in this country soon too. And so it's becoming, instead of PC versus Mac, it's becoming more Android versus iPhone.
So what, are we going to throw away our laptops, or I mean, what?
Well, I mean, it depends on the tasks involved. You know, you wouldn't want to write a paper on an iPhone or even the iPad. It's fairly difficult to work on it on a long-term basis. It's the right tool for, you know, you have to have the right tool for the right job. And with an iPhone or with an Android phone, you're essentially carrying effectively a computer. You know, a computer as powerful as a computer was 4 or 5 years ago in your pocket. And so that you have the mobility combined with the internet and something that's pretty powerful for something that small. And there's all sorts of things that could be done with a device like that.
Have you come up with some apps that just have not worked or just sort of bombed?
We randomly experiment with different apps. I mean, if you search for Componica on iTunes, you'll find that we have several random applications. One of them is a strobe light app that was created by one of the software developers. He was just trying to prove a point to me that I didn't quite understand the whole application market. So he just created this strobe light app that he tossed together in a couple days, and we released it. And it actually has a consistent purchasing rate. People want their phones to flash at a regular interval.
So it's actually a strobe light on the screen? I mean,
well, the screenshots are hilarious. I mean, yeah. You know, the first screen, you just have controls that set the beat and the rate, and then the other four screenshots in iTunes are just blank solid colors because that's really all it does is blink. And it's surprisingly popular.
Okay. What other apps are you dreaming up in your shop? Or could you not discuss it?
We've been focusing on developing applications for other people, and because of that, we can't really discuss too much about that.
So I can go to you and pay you so much to come up with an app for me if I want one.
Yeah, it's actually kind of a balance point for us. We're trying to decide if we want to focus more on consulting to help create iPhone apps for other people, which we do. But also develop apps for ourselves that we publish on our, you know, on our own, like the Memorize Word series.
Now, there's literally thousands of apps, right? I mean, if you go to iTunes or check other sites, there's thousands of apps you can download now.
Yep.
Hundreds of thousands. Have you gone through the list? I mean, I was looking at some examples on iTunes in the category of food. I mean, Grocery IQ makes a grocery list for you. There's one about how to pick a cheese, and there's apps for wine selection and so forth. But, I mean, do people really actually use these and find them valuable in real life?
People use quite a few apps. I mean, if you run into certain individuals and look at their iPhones, you can see that there'll be several pages and pages of installed programs on their devices. A lot of them are free. A lot of them are kind of teasers that you try, and if you like it, then you actually purchase the full version, the non-demo version. That's part of what surprised us was is that out of these thousands and thousands of programs, people really appreciated ours. I mean, it just caught us off guard.
Well, you have a real niche here with Memorize Words because it is, as Katya said, it's not a way to learn a language. It's more a vocabulary experience to pick up words. And are people using this just when they have 10 minutes to kill and they'll think, well, I'll just work on a few words in Spanish and see what I can learn?
It depends on the individual. You know, we do have some data over the usage of the program. And it seems that there's certain people that basically do that. They just kind of catch up on the vocabulary in between. And then there are some people that just really want to learn Spanish as fast as possible, and they will increase the amount of words that they're willing to memorize. And within like 4 or 5 months, they've managed to memorize all 6,000 words.
Well, Steve, where do you want to see Componica going in the next couple of years? How fast will you be expanding? It sounds like it's going really well so far. You got people coming up with new apps, and you're doing well with one really hot program. Where are you going from here?
Well, I want to expand the expand the concept of because it's, you know, memorized words was created more for myself, but I do want to expand it out to include sentence synthesis and grammar, expand it out into different languages and see if there's some way to, you know, integrate it with the various educational systems. But as far as Componica in general, I do intend to expand out our mobile app development group and help create more programs for people.
What's it take to get a job at Componica if you want to be a software engineer?
Be really good at programming.
What, a master's degree or in computer science or something?
Well, you know, degrees are just are one thing. It's more of how proficient the person is at programming.
Yeah.
One of the, it's not like creating a web page. It's you're creating essentially an application for a little tiny computer, and so you have to be well versed in certain types of programming languages and be able to understand concepts in software development.
Katya, I can see that you're excited about the educational potential for many of these apps.
Definitely. I think there is a lot of potential for schools, for colleges, for learning centers that maybe cater to special needs students or students who want to learn specific skills to use different programs and apps on these mobile devices, not just iPhone, iTouch, but other mobile devices and iPad as well. Just not just words, memorizing words, but potentially there can be textbooks, assignments, all kinds of things that can be applied to this technology.
And the apps work on the iPad too, Steve, right? Not quite the same?
Not quite the same because of the screen resolution. When you use an iPad, you can purchase and install the same applications as you can for an iPhone. It's just that it will appear at the same resolution as it does on an iPhone, which is this little tiny screen centered on this fairly large device. I mean, you can double the resolution, but it looks kind of ridiculous.
When you're searching for apps, and let's say I want to be totally loyal to Componica, can I search under your firm's name to see what you're offering?
Yeah, if you just search for Componica, you can see the five products that we created, and they're mostly disjointed. They're not really related to each other. It's just our own little experimentations on seeing what people want in the marketplace.
This is really exciting. I wish you well. You've done so well so far. You're off to a great start. I wish Componica well. Hope you add staff and come up with some more top 10 apps soon.
We're always sitting around programming away, and one of us will just turn around and just say, "How about a bacon app?"
What is it? What you mean for selecting bacon?
Well, just. Stream of consciousness thoughts.
I see.
A piece of bacon being fried and the sizzling noise.
Oh, if you could just do the smell too somehow, that would be.
You just look at the screen and watch it being fried.
Katya, thanks so much. Katya, thanks so much. And Steve, I wish you well with Componica. Thank you.
Thank you for having us here.
Thank you.
Steve Mitchell is the founder and senior software engineer for Componica, located at the University of Iowa's Technology Innovation Center. His wife, Katya Boltanova, is a language acquisition specialist. Following the Environment Report on Talk of Iowa, we'll talk to the publisher of Iowa's newest history magazine, the Iowa History Journal. It's off to a blazing start. This is Talk of Iowa. I'm Dennis Reese. Iowa's newest history magazine is now in its second year. The Iowa History Journal was the idea of longtime Cedar Rapids Gazette sports editor and more recently publisher of the Newton Daily News, Mike Chapman. It's already featured more than 100 articles on Iowa history, including the Iowa History Quiz. Chapman says the magazine is off to a great start.
Our concept is that history is exciting and fun and has a lot of energy to it, and it has to be taught that way, and it has to be written that way. So when you see Iowa History Journal, for instance, the first issue had a full, beautiful color photo of Niall Kinnick in his heyday at the University of Iowa, And the lead story was, who was Niall Kinnick really, and why is he still important today to Iowans? And it was the first of a three-part series. The first part concentrated on his upbringing in Adel, Iowa. The second part concentrated on his fabulous athletic and academic career at the University of Iowa. And then the third part concentrated on the years when Niall left the university, when he learned how to be a pilot in the United States Navy Reserve Pilot Corps, and then his loss of life when he flew off the USS Lexington aircraft carrier and perished at sea. So that's what we're trying to do with Iowa History Journal. We're trying to make it fun and exciting. For instance, the last issue has a cover on Alley-Oop, mm-hmm. the time-traveling caveman who is in 600 newspapers around the world. Well, Alley-Oop was created by V.T. Hamlin, who lived in Perry, Iowa in the 1930s. And today, the tradition is carried on by Jack Bender, mm-hmm. an artist from Waterloo.
I want to ask you about Alley-Oop in a few minutes. But looking at just the covers of your first few issues, I see Donna Reed was featured on one. George Reeves, Superman, from Iowa, on an issue. Of course, Herbert Hoover featured on an issue. And then a man by the name of Fred Becker, the cover of the magazine, that particular issue, says his incredible story of Iowa athletics and patriotism. Now, I had never heard of Fred Becker before I read this article. Can you just go over the highlights?
I graduated from East Waterloo High School in 1961, and I had driven by the front of the building probably 1,000 times in the last 40 years. A year ago, I was driving by the building at sunset. Nobody was around, and I saw a little plaque in the front. And I got out and walked up the huge steps, and there's the flag flying and flapping in the breeze. And I look at this little plaque, and it says, "In memory of our two classmates who gave their life in freedom's cause." And it said, "Lieutenant Fred Becker, class of 1914, who was killed in the Battle of Chateau Thierry in France, July 18th, 1918. And as I walked away from that plaque, I thought, wow, Fred Becker, I'm a former Iowa sports editor, the Cedar Rapids Gazette, and sports writer, and consider myself an athletic historian. And I knew that the very first All-American football player at the University of Iowa was named Fred Becker. And I thought to myself, it couldn't possibly be the same person, or I would have heard of him by now. So I called the University of Iowa Sports Information Director, Phil Hattie, who's been there 30 years and is a great historian, of course, himself. I said, "Phil, what can you tell me about Fred Becker?" And he said, "Well, he was Iowa's first All-American, and he was killed in World War I. I said, "Do you happen to know where he's from?" And he says, "You know, I don't. I've never heard." So I go back and start doing research, and I find out that Fred Becker from East Waterloo was the very first All-American football player, of course, in Iowa history. He made the first team as a sophomore. Then he signed up, fought in World War I as a Marine officer. He was almost a straight-A student at Iowa and the most popular man on campus, said an Iowa City newspaper. So here this young man charges up the hill, takes out a German machine gun nest, and is credited with saving the lives of 30 of his comrades. A week later, he's shot and killed and is buried on the field of combat in France, not quite 22 years of age. At his funeral in Waterloo, May 21st, 1921, 5,000 people attended. It was the largest gathering ever in the history of Waterloo up to that point. He was given the American Distinguished Service Cross, the Belgian War Cross for bravery, and the French Croix de Guerre. He is the most decorated soldier in the history of Waterloo, Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
Hardly anybody knew that story.
That's so ironic that we had Fred Becker killed in World War I, All-American, and then Niall Kinnick killed in World War II.
Absolutely. And you know that Niall Kinnick gave what is considered the most famous Heisman Trophy acceptance speech ever in 1939.
Yeah.
And his last comment was talking about how much rather the young men of this country would rather fight to win the Heisman Trophy than the Croix de Guerre. Now, the Croix de Guerre was awarded to Fred Becker in 1918. Here, Niall Kinnick, 21 years later, is making reference to the Croix de Guerre, and we know that Kinnick was a great historian. I'm totally convinced, and so are several other friends of mine who really study Iowa history, that Niall Kinnick would have known that Fred Becker had won the Coeur d'Alene. So here you have this incredible connection between Fred Becker and Niall Kinnick.
Could you go into a little bit of detail about his Fred Becker's football career? I mean, was there a big game? What season was it? And who was Iowa playing in those days?
It was 1916, and they played an 8-game schedule, and the Hawkeyes went 6-2 that year. I'm sorry, the Hawkeyes went 5-3 that year. His big game was against Iowa State. He was all over the field making tackles, and one account in a Chicago newspaper said he blasted through the Iowa State offensive line twice and blocked two punts late in the game, the last one securing the victory. They also played several Western Athletic Conference teams, and that later became the Big Ten. He played against Minnesota. He played against Northwestern. And Walter Eckersall, the person who selected the All-American team for the Chicago Tribune, said Fred Becker has the fighting spirit that you like to see in every player. And Fred Becker was about 5'11 and 175 pounds. He was an offensive lineman. He was quick as a cat from everything I read. And get a load of this, Dennis, he often played with no helmet. Helmets were optional back in 1916. So actually, in Iowa History Journal, we have a fabulous photo from the University of Iowa archives of Fred playing in a game, and everybody else has a helmet on except for Fred.
Whoa.
And his goal, by the way, the minister said this at the funeral in Waterloo in 1921, that Fred Becker's goal was to be a surgeon and join that young brother team up in Rochester, the Mayo brothers. So here's another example of America and Iowa losing one of their finest products, just like they lost Niall Kinnick and they lost the five Sullivan brothers. By the way, Fred Becker grew up just two blocks from where the five Sullivan brothers grew up 20 years later. And, of course, you know, all five of them perished in World War II.
Yeah. Are there any relatives still around of Fred Becker, do you know, or?
The University of Iowa tried very hard to find living relatives. It was Fred, and he had two sisters. And they were not able to locate either sister or any remaining family members, and they tried very, very, very hard. Les Steenley, the associate athletic director in charge of the University of Iowa Athletic Hall of Fame, and his staff tried very hard to find any living relatives, but they just came up empty, and so that's why they invited me to accept on his behalf.
This is Talk of Iowa. I'm Dennis Reese, speaking today with Mike Chapman, the editor of the new Iowa History Journal. Mike Chapman, a longtime sports reporter for the Gazette in Cedar Rapids, and the publisher of the Newton Daily News. Mike, just a few issues of this new journal out since it debuted in 2009. Looking at the latest issue, I want to ask you about Alley-Oop, because that was a revelation to me that the man and actually his wife helped him to a tremendous extent, was an Iowa native. And this was a comic strip that debuted, what, mid-1930s or so?
In the 1930s, and it was the creation of V.T. Hamlin, who was born and raised and graduated from Perry High School and then actually worked for a while in Des Moines, but very, very imaginative person, and he created this a muscular time-traveling caveman who rode a dinosaur and had all these incredible exploits and adventures, and it's seen in over 600 daily newspapers around the world. It's still very popular. It plays in quite a few papers in Iowa. I know the Newton Daily News, when I was the publisher, we ran it, and it's still running there today. So, yeah, Alley-Oop is from Iowa.
His wife was a big help. Her name was Dorothy, and was she also from Iowa?
Yes, she's from Perry as well, and she was very supportive of V.T. Hamlin, and she actually came up with the idea of the time-traveling machine.
Okay, originally, so this was Dorothy's idea that Alley-Oop could travel around in time, which, of course, was a unique aspect of this comic strip.
A very essential aspect of the comic strip, as you mentioned, and because V.T. admitted that he was running out of story ideas, having Alley-Oop just run around in prehistoric Moo, that's the name of the village that he lived in, and his wife said, well, why don't you send him through time? So he came up with the idea of a time machine, and Alley-Oop could travel through time. In fact, in one of his episodes, he travels to Iowa in 1910 to converse with Frank Gotch, of Humboldt, Iowa, the greatest professional wrestler who ever lived, and then goes to Iowa City in the 1990s to learn more wrestling technique from Dan Gable.
So Iowa has the most had the most famous wrestler of all time, is that what you said?
Oh, yes, absolutely. And Frank Gotch will be on the cover of an upcoming issue. I'm the world's leading authority on Frank Gotch. He was born and raised in Humboldt, Iowa in 1905. He became the American heavyweight professional champion when pro wrestling was completely legitimate. In 1908, he won the World Heavyweight Championship in front of 33,000 people in Chicago. It was the largest crowd ever to see an athletic event in America. Gotch was very handsome, articulate, a charming personality outside the ring, and very, very tenacious and goal-oriented inside the ring, kind of like Tom and Terry Brands, today's head coaches and assistant coach at the University of Iowa. And he became the best-known sports personality in the country in the 1910 to 1918 period. Teddy Roosevelt invited him to the White House twice. He was a star of a play that went up and down the East Coast. And Dennis, Frank Gotch is the reason the state of Iowa has this great wrestling tradition today. All the farm kids growing up in the 1920s and 1930s looked up to Frank Gotch. It was like Babe Ruth lived up the road in Humboldt, Iowa. Now, Frank died in 1917 from a very mysterious illness. He was only 39 years old. But even 20 years later, the Des Moines Register did a poll to find out what Iowan was most respected by other Iowans in any walk of life. And Frank Gotch won by a 2-to-1 margin over the next closest person.
Well, this was before professional wrestling sort of, I guess you could say, degraded to the state it's in now, right?
Absolutely. It was a pure athletic competition. But some of the matches between two evenly matched opponents, Dennis, could take up to 2 hours. And that was okay in the 1910 era before the Roaring Twenties came into existence and before other sports, baseball and football, really took off in the 20s and boxing even became more popular. So back in the Gotch era, although no other wrestlers could match Gotch and stay that long with him, some of the matches would go an hour and a half to 2 hours. And by the 20s and 30s, people just weren't going to stand for that or sit for it either. And so that's when they introduced all the theatrics and all the comedy and everything, the flying drop kicks and the jumping off the ropes and the punching and all that that went with it. But in the Frank Gotch era, professional wrestling was more like a college match today with two exceptions. No time limits, and you could use submission holds.
Okay, so no theatrics for Frank.
No theatrics for
okay.
Frank.
I want to get back to alley-oop because I hadn't finished talking about it. It's
sure.
So much fun. You had this fabulous photograph of products that some years ago that were based on alley-oop. Of course, it's a very famous song, as we all know, but I'm looking at the products. There's books. There's board games. There is, believe it or not, alley-oop soup.
Yes.
do you remember when that was around? I don't remember.
No, I think that predates us, Dennis,
okay.
A little bit before our time probably. But I'm a big Tarzan fan, too. And there used to be Tarzan bread and Tarzan gasoline. And then in the 50s, a lot of our listeners might remember, there was Hopalong Cassidy bedspreads and curtains and Davy Crockett this and that. So back in the 30s and 40s, there was just a lot of advertising done through creative methods like getting comic strip characters involved. I'm sure the alley-oop soup didn't last very long, though.
I wonder what was in it. But anyway, Tarzan gasoline. I wonder, my neon probably would do well with that if it was still around.
Oh, I think so. Yeah, especially if you were trying to run a herd of elephants.
Anyway, how long?
And that reminds me of something else about Frank Gotch. He was the first athlete to really be used in endorsements. I actually have several advertisements in my Frank Gotch collection of a shaver and a whiskey and other items. And in 1934, Harley Davidson used Frank Gotch's image in an entire series of ads, said Frank Gotch had the power that wins, and so does Harley Davidson. And get a load of this, Dennis. Frank Gotch had been dead for 17 years.
I was going to say,
his reputation was so strong, like Babe Ruth today, that Harley Davidson was using this native of Humboldt, Iowa, to advertise its motorcycles in 1934.
That's amazing. Well, anyway, how long did V.T. Hamlin and his wife, Dorothy, produce alley-oop?
For almost 40 years, they were involved in one way or another. they moved to Texas, and then they moved to Florida, and he would do the artwork in Florida and send it to the syndication in New York City. And then he relinquished it to a fellow by the name of Dave Grau, and then Dave Grau relinquished it in the 1990s to Jack Bender. And Jack Bender was born and raised in Waterloo and worked on the Waterloo newspaper as an editorial cartoonist for many years and is one of my dearest friends. He now lives in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and he and his wife have been doing the strip since the 1990s. But like I said, Jack's from Waterloo, Iowa. So Alley-Oop has an Iowa angle to him all over again.
And it's still in 400-something newspapers, I think you 650 newspapers. That's pretty amazing.
It really is. At its peak in the 40s, it was around 1,000.
I grew up reading Jack Bender's editorial cartoons in the Waterloo Courier. He's still enjoying, he and Carol are still enjoying this producing a daily comic strip?
They absolutely love it. And you probably saw the color picture of them then on the inside of this issue showing them at work in their Tulsa studio. And Jack just absolutely loves doing the Alley-Oop strip. He's 75 years young. I mean, I tell you, this guy is in great shape. He swims. He walks long distances. He's just Jack's a dynamo. And 2 years ago, we hosted a national Tarzan convention in Waterloo. I was the host, and Jack was one of the special guests because he has a huge Tarzan art collection. So I stay in real close contact with Jack, and he and Carol are just doing wonderful.
And the Wrestling Museum is now in Waterloo, is that right?
Yes, it is. I created it when I was publisher of the Newton Daily News. I came here in 1998 and became publisher of the newspaper. I'd been executive editor in Dixon, Illinois, Ronald Reagan's hometown, for 10 years. And that's where the corporate headquarters are, Shaw Newspapers. And then I came to Newton to be the publisher, and I started the Wrestling Museum on the side. We formed a not-for-profit group and a board of directors, and we bought the building, the old restaurant terrace lounge that sat right off Interstate 80, and I was naive enough to think it'd be a nice weekend hobby for me. Well, within 3 years, it had pretty well taken over my entire life, so I ended up resigning my position as publisher to be the executive director of the International Wrestling Institute Museum. It was in Newton for 9.5 years. Then we moved it to Waterloo in 2007.
You have a great article in this issue about 1965, the year that Iowa took college wrestling away from Oklahoma. It happened to be Iowa State that had that accomplishment. A very interesting article. And we're still the kings of wrestling after all those years, aren't we?
Yes, we are. There's no question about that. We've always, because of Frank Gotch, we'd been the king of professional wrestling for many, many years. Most of the great pro wrestlers came out of the Midwest in the 1910, 20, 30, 40 era. And then it faded away, and Oklahoma became the great college wrestling state. And then Harold Nichols, Dr. Harold Nichols from Cresco, Iowa, was named head coach at Iowa State University. And in 1965, the Cyclones won their first ever NCAA title. And over the next 20 years, they won it 7 times more and were in the top 5 every year. I give tremendous credit to Dr. Harold Nichols for turning the corner for Iowa State University. See, before then, wrestling like Oklahoma was a take-em-down, let-em-up, take-em-down, let-em-up style of wrestling. Mm-hmm. Harold Nichols advocated a very physical Frank Gotch style of wrestling. Take-em-down, pound on them, turn them, and pin them.
I wish I could have been there for that that tournament in Wyoming, wasn't it, in 1965? Very cold couple of nights.
Yes, I can remember how the story starts out. There was a blizzard raging outside the Laramie Fieldhouse, and there was a cyclone raging inside as Iowa State came roaring back to win the national title, their first ever. And there was two great exponents of Dr. Nichols' style of very physical wrestling. One was Tom Peckham from Cresco, Iowa, and the other was Dan Gable from Waterloo. And they were just very physical style of wrestlers who didn't believe in taking you down, letting you up, and taking you down, the Oklahoma style. They believed in taking you down, bar-arming you, and turning you to your back and pinning you. And once again, that was a Frank Gotch style. Dr. Nichols even told me when I interviewed him for that story in the 60s that Frank Gotch had been his hero as a kid growing up in Cresco, Iowa. So even that story harkens back to the days of Frank Gotch.
That's amazing. Mike, we're just about out of time. The magazine is Iowa History Journal. I'm sure you have a website.
We do. Very simple. www.iowahistoryjournal.com. And there they can see the covers of all 8 previous issues. We've had, as you said, Herbert Hoover, Donna Reed, George Superman Reeves. The USS Iowa battleship was on the cover. Alley Oop, Fred Becker, Niall Kinnick. And they can also see a list of most of the stories. And, Dennis, I give speeches all over the state talking about Iowa history. I was in the town of Stanton, Iowa.
You better have Mrs. Olson on sometime on the cover.
Yes, we will have a story on Mrs. Olson. I don't know if she'll make the cover, but we'll certainly have a story on her. So they can subscribe by either going to our website or by calling Iowa History Journal offices in Newton at 641-792-0920.
Mike Chapman, it's been very interesting. It's a great magazine. I wish you well with it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dennis.
Mike Chapman is publisher of the Iowa History Journal, the time-traveling caveman Alley-Oop. He's on the cover of the current issue. And that's Talk of Iowa. Talk of Iowa, production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Dennis Streets. Thanks for listening.
There's a man in the funny papers we all know. He lives way back a long time ago. He don't eat nothing but a bearcat stew. Well, this cat's name is Alley-Oop. He got a chauffeur that's a genuine dinosaur. Can knuckle y'all.